Presley with Martin Besser.
So our special guest on the show, she's back, is our dietitian, Tabitha Hume. So we're talking about diet myths. There are so many people with so many opinions about diets and things. Yes, sure. Different things work for different people. But let's talk about the myths. Mm. The first myth that we touched on, that's carbs are bad for you. No, the wrong carbs are bad for you. Mm-hmm. There are good carbs that your body needs. Soos ons in staan 7 geleer het. Die proteïne, die carbs nie goed. So, do you know why, where this whole thing about carbs are bad for you comes from? I think it's from people who are proponents of the, what is it called, the carnivore diet and keto and that kind of thing, where you only eat protein and stuff. Like, I think that's where those myths come from.
So there are two different ways of losing weight. Number one, you cut out all carbs and you go much higher in fat. That changes the body into what we nickname the starvation mode, and it starts becoming ketotic, and it starts utilizing fat in that metabolic pathway. We don't generally like that as dietitians, because it puts a lot of pressure on the liver, puts a lot of pressure on the kidneys. It's not a long-term sustainable option, so the person often loses and then gains. And it, regardless of how much protein you put in, it ends up with a negative nitrogen balance, which means you end up slowing your metabolic rate. So you're bound to end up gaining weight thereafter. And it's a little bit of a problem, because as they say, carbs will always find you. So why set yourself up for failure? So yeah, it does come from that. The other way of losing weight is to go the normal Mediterranean way of eating. Focus on what your insulin secretion is, how much fat you're having in your diet. I mean, to be honest, an average person will probably burn about 350 calories of fat per day. And yet the average person in Joburg, even on a low-fat diet, will be consuming somewhere in the region of about 650 calories of fat.
Sure.
So we are eating way too much fat, and yet the response to that is to try and eat less carbs and less food. And it's backwards, because you actually just need to really lower the fat content and lower the actual type of carbs. You know, you don't want to eat less, you want to have the right kind.
All right, let's move on to questions here from 0848500942.
How do you feel about eating according to your blood group? It's something that I've tried to do this year, and it's helped me drop about 15 kilos.
Okay, so the research has absolutely no positive proof that your blood type has anything to do with the type of food you should be eating. So the original proponent of that, unfortunately, his research was very small, and he used his family as the subject. So it's totally unrecognized in the medical field, I'm afraid. The reason most people lose weight is because they're now focusing on their diet, and they will generally make the healthier choice. So it unfortunately doesn't make any difference. It can lead to divorce if you've got a different blood type to your spouse.
So there's no medical or scientific grounding.
Nothing whatsoever. Empirical. Absolutely nothing.
I mean, you see a theme here, and the theme is, just because you're losing weight doesn't make the diet right.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Because also, if you eat nothing, you'll also lose weight.
Yeah. I always say, if I lock you in our bathroom, you'll lose weight. Yeah. You know.
So you got to have the right kind of weight loss for two reasons. One, to be kind to your kidneys and liver and the rest of your organs. Mm. Secondly, also to make it sustainable.
Correct.
Want 20 kilogram nou te verloor, dan tel jy weer 40 op.
Donkey in volgende paar maande.
Okay, here's one I hear all the time. I still don't understand it. This one.
I just want to hear what the clinical dietitian's opinion is with regards to intermittent fasting.
Goodness, if that's not the phrase of the decade.
Thank you. 14-8, guys. 14-8. That's all I know about that.
Intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Wow, I can speak for about 2.5 hours on that.
You have 2 minutes.
Exactly. So it has a lot of positive benefits. A lot of people lose weight. A lot of people just don't. It basically works on the premise that you are giving your body a rest. The rest that you're giving your body is something that makes it slow down in its burning capacity, which isn't ideal in the long term. Second of all, it can lead to quite a lot of acidity problems all the way through the morning while while you're not eating. People who have acidity buildup really shouldn't be doing that. And then it, unfortunately, the research has also shown that on that the intermittent fasting has been can lead to binge eating disorder on the weekends and other times. So it has its positives and it has its negatives. So a lot of people say, "Oh, well, it decreases your insulin response." Yes, it does, because you're not eating anything. But what they've shown is, in the long term, your actual insulin response is even worse. So you can become mildly insulin resistant after a long period of intermittent fasting. So you can hear, I'm not a fan, but I have to be dead honest. The research is still pending, so I can't 100% comment on it. I can't say for sure that it's good or bad.
It sounds like it could work for some people.
Yeah.
If you take medical consultation on it.
Absolutely. I think if you're noticing acidity, if you're noticing binge eating disorder, if you're noticing various changes that are kind of negative, then rather don't do it.
That it's not for you.
Exactly. Yeah. If it's working for you, stunning.
Lots of questions coming in. We'll get to some more in a moment.
You're with your online family. Breakfast with Martin Bester.
Our special guest, well, she's back because there's just so much talk, especially on social media, misleading stuff when it comes to diets. In weet jy wat nee, almal wil hulle beste lyk en voel, but in the process, you also shouldn't harm your body.
Or nom, you shouldn't
lose weight, and then it all comes back with friends.
Nom, 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 nom,
exactly,
nom.
Afterwards. And we're going into winter.
Yes, nom, 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 nom.
A whole lot of nom, noms.
That's not
the weather. In my belly.
Because you deserve it. It's been a long week.
Well, and it's cold. And now what must happen? Why must you not have lasagna with ice cream and pancakes for dessert and lie underneath the blanket?
Because you're being so good in the week.
Thank you.
So now you're going to pick it all up again.
Yeah, on the
weekend. But it's okay. You're wearing very big jerseys.
No, so no one will see you wearing your winter clothes.
All right, Tabitha, let's talk about sugar. The big no-no, the big villain, how bad is it?
Okay, so sugar itself is an ordinary carbohydrate, but let me start right up front by saying too much of anything is bad for you. And sugar itself, because it tastes so delicious and it actually stimulates a little bit of dopamine and serotonin in our brains, which makes us feel really good. Because of that, we as human beings tend to ignore moderation and go completely overboard. And no one is better at this than the Americans, if I can be so cheeky. They will have a donut for breakfast with a fizzy drink. And then mid-morning, they'll have a chocolate and a fizzy drink. Lunch, they will have something unbelievably sugary. And so it goes on. So the person ends up having a lot of sugar, which is not good. And because of this, they will completely forego anything that is nutritious. So the reason for us overdoing one thing is forgetting the other things. That's what causes the major disease. And having just way too much sugar puts huge strain on the pancreas and the liver. But what we do know is if 90% of your diet is an incredibly healthy diet, with all the nutrients included and insulin control and lower fat and lots of fruits and veggies, etc., then adding a reasonably moderate amount of sugar to your diet is not a problem. So going completely sugar-free is silly. Demonizing sugar is silly. We just need to understand as adults what moderation is. In fact, the World Health Organization says if you're having less than 9 teaspoons of sugar per day, that is more than moderate.
9?
Yeah, 9. Whereas you have a cola,
where it's in something.
Well, added sugar. So, for instance, if it is a yogurt and it's got a teaspoon of sugar in it, that's obviously added sugar. Yeah. So anything added sugar.
What is a teaspoon? What? How many grams?
4 grams.
So 4 grams per 100.
That's 4 grams. No, it's just a teaspoon is 4 grams of sugar.
But when you look at the back of the label, which we're going to talk about now as well, and it says, I often say, like, people read the back, but do we know what we're reading? So below certain amount of carbs,
is good.
Per 100 is good or bad. Sugar, good or bad.
So, no. We don't really look at how much carbs. You kind of use your noddle and you have a look and say, is that a carb food? I mean, if it's pasta, it's a carb food. If it's a veggie soup, it's not a carb food.
But mayonnaise with 60%, 60 grams of fat, probably.
Yes, exactly. Fat, very different story. 100%. That's really problematic. Yeah. Too much fat. But yeah, when you're looking at the sugar, to get totally over obsessed with sugar is silly when you should be looking at other things in the diet, should be looking at the bigger picture. But having said that, if you are having a low GI muesli with lots of fruit and a fat free yogurt, and then you have 1 teaspoon of sugar on it, there's no issue there. If you are having a cola and a donut for breakfast, you've got way too much sugar and you're not having any nutrients. So you just got to look at it as an adult and say, am I adding a little bit of sugar to make things that are otherwise extremely nutritious delicious? In which case, that's fine.
All right. Fruit juice.
Okay. Long story.
The fact that is fruit juice good or bad? I've heard people pro fruit juice. Yeah. I've heard people anti fruit juice.
Definitely hear both.
As with everything, you've got something good and bad. So fruit juice is jolly good because it contains a lot of extra vitamins and minerals. It contains lots of various different positive things. Phytonutrients, it contains antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, etc. So I understand it's quite a concentrated form of all of those good things. However, one glass of freshly squeezed organic orange juice with no additives whatsoever still contains approximately 8 oranges. And that is a lot of concentrated fructose, which is the special sugar that's in fruit. And that fructose, interestingly enough, can't be used for energy. It has to go via the liver to be converted into glucose to be used as energy. So if you're eating 1 or even 2 oranges, you feel quite full, and that's enough for your liver to cope with. But if you're having a glass of orange juice, which to me is easy to clap in about 4 minutes, that is a huge bottleneck of fructose. So the liver battles, and it suddenly transforms a lot of that immediately because of that kind of panic, transforms a lot of that fructose into triglycerides, which causes a fatty liver and can spike your cholesterol levels as well.
But now it's all relevant. Mm. If you're a person who's transitioning from a bad diet into better eating, substituting what normally would have been a sugary soda with a fruit juice is a step in the right direction.
It's a step in the right direction because it has more good nutrients, without a doubt.
And fiber.
And fiber, a little bit more fiber, yes. But it still causes the same problem with the liver. So as a dietitian, my job when I graduated after 5 years was to promise the Hippocratic Oath, which is to first do no harm. So I would never recommend the transition of that because it's almost replacing one with another. But I would say go for a third fruit juice and 2/3 water. That would be amazing.
Okay. So dilute
your
fruit
liver juice. Doesn't battle. Yeah.
I've been doing, even with the iced teas.
Oh, clever you.
The good iced teas.
But you see.
Well,
excellent.
I read.
Careful what you read.
I know. I read Facebook. No. All right. Listen, I'm just trying to think. Okay, so talking about juices, and I brought up tea now.
Okay, the thing heard where they say a cup of green tea is equal to burning about 100 calories per cup. Is it war?
Negative calories. They said the same thing about celery.
Okay, so celery, different topic entirely. But so green tea contains quite a lot of caffeine in it. So caffeine stimulates your sympathetic nervous system, a little bit of adrenaline. The higher your adrenaline, the more fight and flight response, the more calories you're going to burn. Obviously, it's different in every single person how many calories you burn. But we don't really want to look at calories in, calories out as an exclusion, because you've got to remember that somebody's metabolic output changes by about 500 calories a day. So it's never really exact. And what does happen with, if you're having 1 cup of green tea, it's loaded with antioxidants, that's super. But if you are somebody that's a bit caffeine sensitive, I wouldn't recommend it. But 1 cup really can do no harm. It'll do a little bit of good, but I wouldn't use that as a weight loss aid. I would look more at your overall balanced diet.
We've run out of time, and there are so many important things that we haven't touched on.
And this?
I'm going to try and squeeze in one more bit, specifically about calorie counting, now that you've mentioned it. It seems to be a big thing and often a misunderstood thing when you have to read the back of the label, the calorie, counting the calories, or kilojoules. Last bit. The rest, we're going to put to podcast. We're going to ask Tabitha just to touch on a point or two that came in on the WhatsApp line this morning. Stand by. Okay, I've kept Tabitha, I almost said awake. I've kept her here for way too long. Tabitha Hume is back on the show this morning, our clinical dietitian expert. Very finally, just quickly, calorie counting is a big thing. Felicity, I know it's definitely a point that you wanted to get to as well, because people read the back of the label and you start counting and you make calculations and you go, well, boom, now I should start losing weight because I'm burning more calories than I've ingested. But it's more complicated than that, is it?
Okay, well, yes and no. First of all, calorie counting needs to employ a balance. You can't just have a certain number of calories of chocolate. You know, obviously you're going to get sick. But calorie counting does work. Calories in, calories out does work. But it's a little antiquated when you're in the world of metabolism. We now know that, unfortunately, only 3.5% of calorie-restrictive diets work and keep people slim 10 years later. So it's, you know, if somebody was to say to you, this works for 3% of the population, you would tell them to go take a hike. So it's interesting that people are still stuck on it. And I think it's that immediate gratification. So currently, metabolically, we know of three natural ways of losing weight, either calorie in, calorie out, but it can lead to quite a lot of problems and eating disorders, we've shown. The next thing, and also, by the way, it lowers the metabolism. So once you've started eating less, you kind of need to carry on eating less, which can cause problems. Then the other way of losing weight is, as we've mentioned, the banting, cutting out all carbs completely, but the long-term problems there can be very, very difficult. And it's not entirely sustainable, according to the research. And then the third way is the way that I work, which is to control insulin levels only. We don't even look at calories. So we're controlling insulin levels. We're reducing fat so that you've got maximum fat burning on the body. You're looking at maximizing and increasing metabolic output. And we're looking at overall health. It's basically the Mediterranean diet adjusted, not just for health, but for fat loss. So there are three main ways. Obviously, the choice is the person's. But you'll find that the majority of metabolic experts will not go carb-free.
So is it relative? So when you're looking, for instance, at milk,
yes,
to choose, to read the back and then choose the one that is seemingly better, the one that is fewer calories, less fat, less carbs. So that's where calorie counting and reading labels, It's like a good reminder.
It is a good reminder, but rather than just looking at the calories, we want to know what the calories comprise of. So, for instance, unfortunately, we all love cheese, but if you look at that, that is 31 grams of fat per 100. Mm. So a third of what you're eating is fat. And the worst part is nearly all of that fat is pure saturated fat, which just causes your body to just clog up its arteries and lead to strokes and heart attacks. So, you know, cheese wouldn't be a good one if you're wanting to lose fat and prevent heart attacks. Fat-free milk, there's a weird myth going around saying that fat-free milk has lots of sugar added to it. I need to say this is absolute rubbish. I don't know where it came from, but fat-free milk is definitely much less harmful than full cream milk. Because full cream milk is just really saturated.
Soy milk versus almond milk versus oat milk.
Okay, so the plant milks are much better environmentally, much, much better, and have shown many more benefits to health as well. A lot of people battle to switch across, but soy milk has more protein. The other ones are just terribly good for you, but they don't contain as much protein. So if you're wanting to use that as a protein source, then soy milk is excellent.
Is the way to go.
It definitely is. I took about 3 weeks to get used to soy milk because it tastes so different. But I feel much better since I've changed across.
It's 8:30. Thank you very, very much.
No, I was just thinking now, we're talking about soy milk and milk, and I was thinking about fat. So seed oils and coconut oils and that kind of stuff. Because those are, that's also that one, but if we can't.
Okay, quickly. Coconut oil is most definitely not the healthiest oil. Most definitely not. It's one of the biggest social media explosions of misinformation. I can't go any further than that, but it's rubbish.
Well, you're going to have to come back again. Out of time, but it's been so interesting, and there will be one or two points that we'll definitely put.
I'm on social media if you want to see a little bit more on there as well.
Cool. Follow Tabitha Hume. And also check out our podcast section. It's called Audio On Demand on jacaranda.fm.com if you want to hear something again or share it along. Thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Bon appétit.
Merci.
This is Breakfast with Martin Bester. Jacaranda FM.